welcome to This Week in Debian, the podcast bringing you the latest interviews and news inside the Debian community, brought to you by frostbitemedia.org, the network bringing you your favorite GNU Linux podcasts. Hey, thanks for listening. Before we get into the interview, I want to mention our sponsor, HostGator. They're a hosting company that has shared hosting, VPS hosting, dedicated servers. You can get a shared hosting plan for $5 a month with unlimited bandwidth, unlimited disk space. These guys are awesome. They run their servers on CentOS. This is what all the Frostbite stuff is running on, and I want to thank them for being a sponsor. So if you want to go check out HostGator, go to frostbitemedia.org/HostGator and sign up for an account and check them out. They're really great. They've been nothing but fantastic to us. So check out frostbitemedia.org/HostGator. Here's the interview.
The third annual Southeast Linux Fest is happening June 10th through 12th in Spartanburg, South Carolina. If you've been to SELF before, you know how awesome it is. If you've never been to SELF, you're missing out on one of the truly great things in life. Come to hear informative and entertaining talks from our many engaging speakers on topics from building a community to building a death ray. Come to socialize with your fellow geeks. Come to see a hillbilly deliver a highly technical talk while drunk off his... In addition to our normal scheduled events, we'll also have a number of affiliated events this year. We'll be having BSDA certification, LPI certification, training from Puppet Labs, Drupal Camp, and UbuCon, and a Build an Open Source Cloud Day. So come to the Southeast Linux Fest June 10th through 12th in Spartanburg, or regret it for the rest of your life. For more information, visit www.southeastlinuxfest.org.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us today in this episode. We've got a fantastic interview here for you. We're speaking with Philip Newborough. He's the project leader of CrunchBang. Philip, thank you for joining us today.
Hello.
And again, I forgot to, this is like take three or four, but again, I forgot to mention you're also known as Core Nominal on Identica.
Yeah, yeah.
So if people want to know more about that, they can probably check you out on Core Nominal or check you out on Identica.
Yep.
So, Philip, we mentioned that you're the project leader of CrunchBang, but before we get into talking about CrunchBang, can you tell us how you first even got involved into Linux?
Ooh, tricky question. I started work as a web developer down in Swindon. That probably means nothing to you, does it? It's a town just southwest in the UK. When I went down there, my boss, he had, at the time, version of, I think it was some sort of, I think it was probably Red Hat running GNOME. So it was about, like I say, about 1999, and he introduced me to it there. It sort of piqued an interest. It was something different, something new, and sort of went from there, really.
Oh, that's cool. So I assume you started off using Red Hat, and then what did you kind of bounce around to?
Well, I came back from, I was commuting at the time, so when I got home, I purchased a copy of SUSE Linux, and I used that for a while. Moved on from there to Open Linux or Caldera Systems, was it, at the time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, didn't use that for very long. Probably had a bit of a break. I mean, still using Windows at the time as well, so had a bit of a break, and then I think the first one I used sort of like on a near enough full-time basis would probably have been around about the time of Fedora Core 2. So
so you kind of always stuck with the RPM distributions for a while there. What got you over to the like the Debian based distros then?
Well, that'd be Ubuntu. So,
okay.
Yeah, when it came out first.
Oh, that's cool. So then, can you tell our listeners, if they don't know what CrunchBang is, can you tell them a little bit about it and, you know, why you started the project?
Yeah. CrunchBang's a, well, to begin with, it was a a respin of Ubuntu using OpenBox as the desktop manager and or window manager, and just a few lightweight applications on top. So it was just a personal project which I started, you know, just for myself. So just, you know, something to do, really. So
yeah, and then you kind of had forums and stuff, and it just started picking up speed, and tons of people started using it. Was it more built for sort of like the netbook kind of computers at first?
No, it wasn't really built for anything in particular. It was. I mean, I was using Ubuntu and OpenBox. I was using Ubuntu with OpenBox, and you know, I basically just decided that, you know, it might be fun to try and remaster it so that, you know, instead of having to install Ubuntu from like a minimal CD, I could just, you know, pop a CD in and, you know, within 20 minutes have a working OpenBox environment. So, it wasn't targeted or aimed at any particular type of system at all.
Okay. What brought in the name Crunchbang?
no particular reason. It was, I think I was using crunchbang.org as my domain at the time, just for blogging and, you know, just writing nonsense and stuff, really. And so when I put out the first Crunchbang ISO image, I put it out on my own blog. You know, there was no project site or anything set up at the time, so I just, you know, called it Crunchbang, just, you know, for lack of anything more ingenious, I think.
Yeah, what is like the catchphrase on the webpage? Is like, it says like it might make your computer go crunch bang or something like that.
Just tongue in cheek, I think. So,
so you mentioned you were built off of Ubuntu, but now you switched over to being a Debian derivative. What brought that change on to crunch bang?
A number of factors, I think. Ubuntu is a great system, and, you know, it was good to work with Ubuntu, and you know, but I think Debian is working from using Debian. It's just seemed like a more logical thing to do. You know, Ubuntu being based on Debian, and then Crunchbang being based on Ubuntu. If we just sort of like lose the Ubuntu bit, and, you know, it just seemed to make lose the middleman. Just seemed to make sense. So,
go straight to the source.
Yeah, you know. Ubuntu as well, the developers, you know, they're working towards a, you know, they've got their own mission. They're trying to make, you know, a nice user-friendly, you know, Linux desktop environment. And it's an admirable goal, but it's not necessarily, you know, what Crunchbang's about. So, and working, the problem comes when, say Ubuntu developers make changes to packages specifically for Ubuntu, whereas say the same packages wouldn't have the same patches applied if they'd come straight from Debian. So sometimes, you know, it can cause a bit of a headache. So, you know, and that's just the way it is, isn't it? Like I say, you know, Ubuntu, they're working towards a goal. They've got a mission in, you know, and you know, that's the way they want to do it. So, like I say, I think I've just took the decision just to skip the Ubuntu part and just work directly with the Debian packages.
Well, so speaking of working with Debian directly, being a derivative, have you worked much with Debian? Do they help you out with, like, I know they have that front desk program, and now they're implementing that Dext. So have you been in much contact with them, with them helping you out?
No, not at all. So, in fact, none. I've been pretty slack on that department. I need to, bring the project up to speed and start contributing a bit more, I think. So,
okay, yeah, because I imagine, like, with that front desk program, if someone filed a bug against Crunchbang, then if it was an upstream thing, you could then push it through the front desk and help out the upstream developers. That'd be pretty cool if...
Yeah, that would be brilliant. So,
getting involved on that level.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you also do like a lot of, not, I mean, maybe not necessarily a lot, but I know you have kind of like that custom thing comes up in the terminal to like get updates and install like additional packages and stuff. And I think people have also said you kind of built like an easier way to sort of customize your windowing system with OpenBox. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I've done a lot of work, but it's hard to describe it. I mean, if you were to take if you were to do like an install of Debian from the say a net install CD, and then try and put an open box system together, it would, you know, it could take you a fair few hours to, you know, to put a nice working system together. So the idea behind Crunchbang is basically to remove a lot of that work, so that you can basically pop a CD in, install the system, and then, like I say, within 20 minutes or so, you've got, you know, a nice working system up and running with, you know, all codecs and whatnot available to you. So, yeah, that's basically it. That's what.
With now you built off of Squeeze, I believe, right? That's what Crunchbang is based off of.
Yeah, at the moment, yeah.
Okay, since Squeeze is released, and since you're based off that, does that take less stress and work off of you with like your whole build process now that it's basically done and Squeeze is stabilized? And all you need to really do is push out the updates.
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about Debian, as you know, is, you know, when they say stable, they mean stable. So it's very rarely that you'll get updates coming down. So, you know, Crunchbang 10 Statler, based off of Squeeze, is pretty much complete now. I'm thinking about pushing out some point releases, but they will, you know, basically just contain updated packages and whatnot. So
now, will you ever start building off testing at some point, or will you always be basing off of stable for your final releases?
Yeah, the idea is to always have a stable release. So, obviously, there will be a point when we're building off of testing, but I always tend to use the code names as opposed to the actually within the apt sources file.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. So that way, when they do finalize everything, your apt sources list stays the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. Okay, that's cool. Well, I guess speaking of your build process, can you tell us a little bit about what you do? And I've heard you interviewed before on the Linux Outlaws, and you mentioned like all of your server names are like Muppets and stuff. So can you go into a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, for starters, I use the Debian Live project to produce the CDs. So the majority of the work is, you know, done for me. So I mean, basically, I install Debian Live, the build system, on my server, and then for Crunchbang, I've created a wrapper, a bash script wrapper. So basically, I just pop a few commands into a terminal, and it does its job and goes off and builds the images and whatnot. So it's a fairly simple process. It's once I've worked out all the basics and whatnot, it was, write a shell script and, like I say, bang in a few commands and out pops an ISO at the end of the process.
With the Debian Live, do you have obviously you must have the choice of using testing if you use the Debian Live system? Can you tell us a little bit of how exactly it works? Like you said, you downloaded it, but like, what's kind of the process with that when you're using the Debian Live project?
Okay, well, the Debian Live project is packaged within the Debian repositories, so you can. I'm pretty sure they've changed the package name, but I'm sure if you look for something like Live Helper, there'll probably be a. It'll probably come down anyway. So Live Helper basically consists of a bunch of shell scripts, is what, you know, what they are at the end of the day. So you give it some, you type in your build commands, give it some optional arguments, as to how you want, you know, your final image to be produced. Mm. And, you know, it'll take it from there. So for Crunchbang, because we've got our own repositories and whatnot, we've had to make a few modifications to the Life Helper scripts, but nothing out of the ordinary, nothing, you know, special or anything. So
okay, so like when you use the Debian Live, you basically tell, I want you to grab XYZ packages, and then it just go ahead and pulls down everything and builds it. You can tell, I want this desktop with these packages, and it just goes ahead and basically automates everything for you?
Yeah, basically.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so.
So then do you still have all the VPSs that you had, that you mentioned on the Linux Outlaws, or can you scale back a little bit since you're using the Debian Live?
Yeah, I still use the VPS. It's I don't actually need it anymore. I can probably do without it, but I still use it just because it's there, and you know, it's easy to work with.
Right.
I used to, at the time when I was speaking to Linux Outlaws, I was living on a farm, and I only had it was less than a meg connection.
So oh man.
The real bottlenecks for me at the time were once I'd created the, you know, the ISOs and whatnot on my own system, you know, with a 1 meg connection, there was, you know, there's really not a lot I could do with them. So the idea behind, but you know, getting the VPSs was that I could build the images remotely and then just transfer them through to the download servers and whatnot really quickly. So
just
sped up the whole process by about 100 times.
Yeah, definitely.
And now I've, because I was working that way anyway, I've sort of like linked all the servers together. So I log in via a SSH session, and like I say, I can build the images, and then they automatically transfer to the download servers, and you know, the BitTorrent stuff is all set up for me, and it's just, you know, it's just automated as to being manual. It's just a lot easier. So.
Yeah, I guess like at first when you start using it, it must be hard to kind of, well, maybe not hard, but you kind of have to wrap your head around how it works. But once you get used to it, I imagine, like you just said, it's a pretty automated process.
Yeah, it's a bit like anything in life, really, isn't it? It's once you've been doing it a few times, you just get used to it, don't you? So
do you have an idea of when you might tap into the testing branch? I mean, how long out are you going to wait before you try and start building something off testing?
I don't know. I've not got any, as things with Crunchbang project, I don't really put any deadlines or, you know, any definite plans into place. So it just sort of like happens when it happens. I tend to work in quite intensely for a couple of months or so, and then I'll have a break for a couple of months and just, you know, relax and whatnot.
Right.
So, I mean, I think the project is at quite a nice point at the moment because the Statler is stable, so I've just been enjoying using it, to be fair, and, you know, playing around with some other projects and whatnot. So I would like to start on the next release, but as to when I'm going to do it, I don't know. So it's, I'm trying to think that, yeah, there's some interesting stuff going on. So I think XFCE 4.8 has entered the Debian testing repository, so that would be nice to have a play around with that. There's also some interesting stuff going on with the iSweezel and Mozilla. So I think they're going up to, the packages are going up to the 4.0 releases and stuff in testing and unstable. So it'd be good to have a play around with those as well. Because I think if I could wish that something would have happened for Statler, it would have been that we could have had, yeah, a more up to date web browser just for the release. So it didn't seem to happen. I think we got Chromium version 9, I think, at the moment. So
Yeah, I actually found a I think it's a Mozilla Debian repo the other day where you can actually add the IceWeasel 4.0 into Squeeze.
Yeah, I think it was mozilla.debian.net, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, so I might have a play around with the backports and then, like I say, push out a point release or something. So.
Actually, speaking of that, I guess there's two things. The one thing is, since you're based off of Debian Stable, I imagine you don't see bug reports too often.
No, it's not a... It's a... Yeah, I mean... Like I say, up to the point of the release, when Debian went stable, it was pretty manic. There was lots of, you know, chatter and bug reports and all sorts coming in. But since Debian's gone stable, it's quieting down. So it's quite a nice place to be at the moment. Quite peaceful.
Yeah, and the other thing I was going to mention that you kind of hit on a little bit was. I imagine since you are based off of Debian, you could also take advantage of the backport functionality, right?
Yeah. So I think they're the backports, they grow over time, won't they? I mean, that's the thing with Debian. I think you need to be quite patient at times for, you know, waiting for packages to come down.
Yeah.
But I think the patience pays off because you get a nice stable system that you can work on and, you know, develop on and build on. Whereas it's something I missed, say, when I was using Ubuntu and I was updating every 6 months or so.
Yeah, I actually enabled the backports the other day on Squeeze, and I tried using them. And I was like, I think they're broken. I must be missing something. So I emailed the backport mailing list, and they're just like, yeah, man, you need to wait. There's nothing going on yet.
Yeah. I think it'll be a while. But, I mean, I would imagine that maybe IceWeasel will, you know, be backported, you know, version 4. Like I say, I'm sure it's in testing at the moment, so it should come down. And you may even find other nice bits of software in there, such as LibreOffice and stuff will come down as well. So I think it's just patience, I think.
Yeah, I don't even think IceWeasel was at 4. I think it was like 3.6.1 or something like that. It was barely newer than what's already on the stable release.
Yeah.
And some other news with Crunchbang kind of recently is you started asking the community members to seat the ISOs for Crunchbang, because I imagine that the hosting bill will get quite costly when you're moving, you know, 400 or 500 meg ISOs down, and you know you have a number of people downloading them.
Yeah, I think offering direct downloads has just become unviable at the moment.
Yeah,
the hosting costs. It's not really the host. Well, I suppose it is the hosting cost. I mean, I think last year sometime I started renting some VPSs, and they had 100 meg pipe connection to each, and a unlimited in quotes bandwidth allowance.
Oh man!
Which I then found out was had a soft cap on it, about three terabytes a month, which we quite easily exceeded. So I think quite rightly the hosting provider, you know, throttled the connection and made the servers pretty much next to useless. I think was it last month or the month before, I turned off all the direct downloads and basically just made it a BitTorrent only distribution for the time being. So until I sort something else out.
Yeah, it seems to be going well. My friend Mike was downloading off BitTorrent, and he's like, "Man, there's like 15 or 18 people seating this thing." So I think right now he's still seating it too. So
that's good of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have got the project has got three dedicated seed boxes, so there should always be, you know, a connection there. Yeah, and you know the Crunchbang community are great. They, you only have to sort of like say, oh, I need a bit of help doing something or other, and someone will come along and help you out. So, and with the seeding, it seems to be that, you know, it's quite an easy thing to do, quite an easy way for somebody to contribute to the water project. You know, they can download the ISO in whatever BitTorrent client they're using and just leave it open.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that's how they can contribute back. So, you know, it's brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. It could definitely. I mean, even if like, I think when he downloaded, he was getting well over a meg for the download speed. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's pretty good. I think I tried downloading it the other day, and I think I maxed out my connection. I've got a 50 meg connection at the moment,
and it
maxed it out. So. It came down in just over a minute, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, that's pretty. I think he's on a 20 meg connection, so.
Yeah. So that's better than my old 1 meg connection when I was living on a farm.
Yeah, really. that must be night and day.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Man, so you kind of mentioned earlier you like the. Be taking a break right now and check out some of the distros. Is there anything on your watch that you want to check out?
I've tried out a few things. What have I tried out? Let me think. The Fedora 15.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What do you think of GNOME 3?
Not sure. Undecided.
Yeah.
I can see, you know, why and the reasons behind it, but I don't think it's for me. It's, well, it's a huge difference for when you're used to working with a something like OpenBox or XFCE in it. So, have you tried it yourself?
Yeah, but unfortunately, Orca isn't quite there yet with GNOME 3, so it sort of works and doesn't. So I can't really use it to the full, you know, ability of it. I've seen on the mailing list that. They're like, Orca works, but don't really expect it to really work until GNOME 3.2, which isn't due out until, you know, September or October. So, yeah. Looks like I'm going to miss a cycle here and see what happens next time around.
Right, you're probably not missing much, are you?
Well, just from what I've heard, I don't even like the way it sounds. I just think it's going to totally... Being a blind person, you'd like to have everything exactly, you know, where it is, and... The way that GNOME Shell sounds like, these things are kind of just sort of floating all over the place, and I don't know, it just seems a weird concept to me.
It is a weird concept. Even, you know, it's a weird concept for me. It's but I did install it on my... I have a system that I take to work, and I wouldn't call it my main system, but it's the system I use most. And I installed it with the intention of using it for a week, and ended up using it for about 6 hours.
No, well, that's not good.
No. I mean, I did try. I had, like I say, good intentions. It was, you know, I really wanted to use it and like it and see what it was all about, but I just found that it didn't seem to sit with with my workflow, so.
Yeah. I guess you mentioned wanting to check out the new XFCE. I guess that it looks really cool now, the 4.8.
Yeah, I think they've done some good work in 4.8, the XFCE developers. They've done a lot of work in FUNA, from what I can see.
Hmm.
So improved networking and shares and whatnot in FUNA. So that should be... Well, I think that was something that was... That's always been missing in FUNA.
Yeah.
You know, it should bring it up to speed with... I say bring it up to speed. It's always been quicker than Nautilus.
Speed should, in a different sense.
Yeah, bring it up to speed as in, you know, feature-wise with right. the network sharing and stuff. Because that's something that people on the Crunchbang forums, and they mention quite often that, you know, there's no easy way to set up network shares. So, you know... That's great for XFCE, I think, that they brought that feature in.
Yeah, one thing I'm excited about that, too, is on their roadmap within the next year, they plan on working in some more accessibility, so Orca will be able to, like, start reading the menu panels and all that stuff, so I'm looking forward to that, too. Because right now with Orca, I'm tied to the GNOME desktop. I don't have any other choice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so XFCE, it's almost there anyways, because Orca works well with GTK, and that's what XFCE is built off of, so,
yeah.
You know, a lot of the work is already kind of there, they just need to kind of iron out a few wrinkles.
All right, okay. I suppose that's, well, I mean, to be fair, my knowledge of accessibility and stuff is probably severely lacking, so... comes as a bit of a surprise to me, though, that XFCE is not quite up to scratch. So.
Yeah, even LXDE is an option, too, because that's also GTK, but I've emailed them a while ago, and they're not too concerned about trying to work with accessibility.
That's a shame, then, really, isn't it? So.
Yeah, but, it's open-source projects, and not much you can do about it. I mean, if I could code, I would do something about it, but unfortunately, I don't have the skills for that, so...
Don't know what to say.
But, yeah, so...
I feel bad now. So I'll take it default open box, Crunchbang open box environment is pretty poor.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't. It's not accessible at all. Unfortunately, that's why I'm kind of looking forward to XFCE, because it's from what I can tell, it's a little more lightweight than GNOME. Because I mean, even in GNOME, there's tons of stuff on there I could care less about. So the less there is, the better for me, and the faster the computer is. So
yeah.
something like Crunchbang would be ideal, but just the way Orca works, it does not work with that framework.
Oh, okay. So, ooh.
So yeah, you dodged that one.
Well, I'm just wondering what can be done about it, and I suppose it's something you just have to look into, isn't it? So
yeah, I need to start looking into more of how all this stuff actually works under the hood. I just know what works and what doesn't. I don't know technically why. I need to learn more about how to maybe educate people, programming with accessibility in mind and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but I would have to know more about it first.
Yeah, I suppose it's one of those things that it's not if you're not visually impaired or
right,
it's not going to be something that crosses your radar, is it? So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So it'd just be good to let people know, hey, when you're creating something from the ground up, try and think of accessibility and
raise people's awareness and
exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, Philip, I appreciate your time. I don't know if there's anything that you didn't get a chance to mention or that I might have overlooked, but like we said, unfortunately, I can't use Crunchbang, but I'm a huge fan of the idea, and I'm also a huge fan of working with Debian and Upstream, and I think that's fantastic that you do that. So,
yeah, we need to work on that a bit, but
yeah, see, maybe that's something I can help out with, because I work a little bit with Debian, so maybe I could contribute in that sense, and maybe see about getting you set up with Front Desk or how to work with Dext or whatever. And
yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I think that'd be great to for whatever opportunity you have to be able to just give back to Debian and push everything upstream, and then that way everyone benefits, which I think is one of the greatest things about free software.
Yeah, no argument from me. Total agreement. So,
so yeah. Is there anything else, Philip, that you wanted to mention, or?
No, not really. I mean, I suppose I should. I'd just like to thank everybody that's contributed to the project and helped out, and donated as well. That that's really helped with the cost of the servers and. Just say a big thank you to everybody, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. And I guess I'll add in one last thing. If there's something you feel like you can't help, you feel like you want to help but you have no idea, like Philip mentioned, just download the BitTorrent and seed it for a while. That's more help than you can probably imagine.
Yeah, no, that is. So that's the biggest problem at the moment is actually distributing the distribution.
Yeah, and that's effortless. Just add the BitTorrent into whatever client you're using and walk away. Yeah.
Oh, actually, I probably should say, since moving to BitTorrent only, I've had a few people, not many, just a few, mainly students at colleges that have that their, you know, their network administrators have seen deemed fit not to allow BitTorrent traffic. So apologies to anybody that can't get the ISO at the moment, but you know, I will try and sort something out, but can't really give any promises as to when.
One quick thing that I thought of, that, you know, I don't know if the community members would be interested in trying to do something like this, but I know Fedora does it. It's called the, of course I can't remember the name of it, but basically they have there's a group of people and there's a wiki, and like people that don't have access to high speed internet to download it, they'll put in a request, and people that like live in India or Africa, they'll put in a request, and someone that might live in that area will actually ship them a CD to install. Right. Yeah.
Like a community ship it service.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's sort of like Ubuntu, like, but you know, the people can say, hey, I know I'll spend $2 to send someone this CD. I don't care, you know?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So it could be something that you guys could check into. But
yeah, no, that's a good idea. I'm sure we can sort something out. So
yeah, that's one thing you could try.
Yeah, cool.
All right, well, Phil, thank you for your work on Crunchbank. Thank you for your commitment to free and open software. And I, you know, just thank you for your time for doing this interview. And again, you know, keep up the great work, and everyone's enjoying Crunchbang.
Cool. Thanks, Jonathan.
All right. Thanks, Philip. Have a good day, man.
Yeah, and you.
All right.
Cheers, then.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Debian. If you know someone or you yourself are in the Debian community, please get a hold of us. We can interview you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, our email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Again, that email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.